Now for something completely different.
Welcome to the Following of the Feather. I am Andrew Nathanson. Every other week, a special guest and I have an in-depth discussion about a bird from the game Wingspan. Today's bird is the belted kingfisher, a wetlands-only bird that costs a fish and a wild food, is worth 4 points, has a star nest with 4 egg space, and a 53-centimeter wingspan. It has a pink power that reads, once between turns, when another player plays a wetlands bird, gain 1 fish from the supply. Welcome back, everybody. Today, we're going to be talking about the belted kingfisher, and joining me is Lumen. Hey, Lumen, how you doing?
Pretty good, Andrew. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. So Lumen, for those of you who don't know, is quite a good player of Wingspan, of course, as most of the guests on this show are. Yeah, so we thought we'd talk about this. Lumen, I've gotten to know you through some of your streams on Twitch, for one thing, especially your Agricola streams. Avid followers of the show may remember that in a previous episode, instead of talking about Wingspan, we actually had an episode about Agricola, which is another game that...
Yeah,
I know. It's very strange for when you're expecting a Wingspan episode, of course, to get a podcast about a completely different game. But it was just for fun. Anyway, I'm really into Agricola, so Lumen has great Agricola streams as well. Just at, I don't know, what even is your Twitch handle?
Twitch.tv/Lumen_S.
Got it. Yeah, so if you want to see Lumen do stuff there, that's a great place to check out. But I don't think have you ever streamed Wingspan? I'm not sure I've ever seen that.
Excuse me, of course.
Oh, have you?
I stream Wingspan all the time, though. I stream Wingspan 3 times.
3 times. Okay. I must have missed them. but despite not streaming it quite as much as some other games, you are quite good at Wingspan. And you, in fact, won the last Arena season on Board Game Arena.
The inaugural.
Yes, the first.
Wingspan Arena season.
And for those of you who don't know, I was third in that season. So hopefully we're going to have a pretty good discussion here. I'm sure you already knew this if you were listening to previous episodes of the show, where I'm sure I mentioned that accomplishment at some point in the past. But yeah, so we're talking about the belted kingfisher today. This is a real interesting bird. It's kind of, it's definitely a unique effect in the game. There's only really one other bird with a similar sort of power.
We're going to talk about that other one at some point because it's the best comparison.
Yeah, definitely. But so for those of you who aren't super familiar with it, the belted kingfisher, basically, it costs a fish plus 1 of any other food. Or not any other food, I should say any food.
A wild food, yeah.
Yes. And it can live in the wetlands only. And it's worth 4 points, has a star nest. And its ability is a pink power. And once between rounds, when an opponent plays a bird into their wetlands, you can take a fish from the general supply. I think the first thing that sort of is interesting to note about the belted kingfisher is that it's a wetlands bird that gives you food, which is immediately somewhat rare in the game, and that makes it quite good in the early game, I think.
Yeah, so if we look for like any possible wetlands food giver, belted kingfisher, I believe, is the only one that is not for all habitats. I think every other bird you could get food from the wetlands is playable in any habitat, except
yes,
for the belted kingfisher.
Certainly in the base game. There are a couple birds in the expansions that do that, and those
okay.
are also birds that I consider to be quite powerful.
I will have to explain that although I've done quite well in base game Wingspan, I have literally never played any expansion.
Oh, interesting.
Wingspan, so,
yeah, I've played quite a bit base game, tons of that online, but most of my plays at home, and I've played probably like 100-something games at home. Most of those have been with a couple expansions.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of the Oceania expansion boards; they're pretty terrible. But I do like the birds. So I'll touch on at some point how this bird changes when you play with expansions. But for the most part, our discussion is going to be focused on what we both have more recent experience with, and I guess you only have experience with,
right,
which is the base game. And you've only played on Board Game Arena, or primarily, I assume?
Yeah, I have something less than 5 real-life games of Wingspan.
Yeah, so we're also going to mostly be talking about base game without the Swift Start expansion pack.
Right.
Because even though it's bundled in with basically every copy of Wingspan these days, it's not implemented on Board Game Arena.
Right, and we're also going to be discussing the competitive version.
That is true.
Which involves bans for the two ravens, the Franklin's Gall, and the Killdeer.
Yeah, and also, at least, I think they changed this for the most recent arena season, which I haven't really been participating in much, but in the past arena season where I saw it in play a lot, they weren't including the language-specific bonus cards.
Correct.
Which, interestingly, makes Belted Kingfisher a decent amount better, because you're more likely to get the bonus cards that have to do with nest types, and it has a wild nest.
Yeah, I guess another way of thinking about that is that the Belted Kingfisher doesn't apply to any of the language-dependent bonus cards.
Right, yeah, so it just makes all the ones that it does qualify for more likely. So I want to circle back to something we just mentioned, which is that the Belted Kingfisher is a really good play in the early part of the game. I'm sure avid listeners of the podcast will know that I often talk about how my main goal in the early game is really just to set up the ability to gather two resources per action in terms of food and cards, or more than two, obviously the more the merrier. But basically just to be able to draw cards and gain food efficiently, that's what I think is really important at the start of the game.
And I totally agree, by the way. Yeah.
And the reasoning behind that, which might not be intuitive to a lot of people, is that the eggs, while they are worth points, you just don't need as many of them. And no matter what, you're going to need to play birds in order to build up your power. And you're only going to need one egg per bird played, generally, in the early game. Whereas you might need multiple food. And in order to get the birds you want to play, you're probably going to have to draw multiple bird cards. And plus, you already start with the ability to gather two eggs in one action just on the board. So even if you don't improve that action at all, it's already better than the other actions.
Yeah, I guess to me, what I would consider mentioning is that there's inequality between the values of each resource type.
Yeah.
We have the food resources, we have the egg resources, and we have the card resources. Food resources are worth inherently way more than egg resources. Eggs are literally just endgame points unless you don't have enough to play your next bird.
Yeah.
And cards let you scale up from bad or mediocre birds into good birds if you have enough card access. So those are way more valuable than single point eggs. So that's, in my point of view, the way I look at forest and wetlands early actions being really crucial.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. One other thing, this isn't really entirely related to the Belted Kingfisher, but something I do think about is that there's almost like a hidden resource beyond cards drawn, which is just cards seen.
Oh, yes, yes.
And that's like once you have enough card draw, cards seen is just as valuable because you're just going to be drawing enough cards that you have all the cards you could ever want to play. And so just seeing more cards improves the value of each card that you have.
Right.
So that's another thing you can always consider is that even if you don't draw that many cards, if every time you draw cards, you're getting cards that you really want, and you can accomplish that with something like a duck of some kind or common yellow throat, something that lets you filter cards, or even the ones that let you tuck and draw, or just draw one, discard one. They might not be amazing right at the start when you really would like to be drawing extra resources into your hand, but later on in the game, those can be nice for getting you to the cards you actually want.
Right, and I mean, literally every single extra card that you see, whether or not you have to discard another immediately, still helps you on track to get better birds in your game.
Yep. And so the Belted Kingfisher, because it's a card that gives you food, but you play it into your wetlands row, you're inherently making your card draw better while getting food at the same time. So you can get away, I find, with a lot worse of other kind of like food gathering for a longer time. It kind of, I almost think of it as a way to sort of stall your game a little bit while you draw into better birds. Because it's going to kind of passively generate you the food to eventually play those birds.
I mean, I consider it an example of that generic strategy of, can I get all or most of the food I need without taking forest actions? So if I can draw a couple cheap birds that cost either a wild food or one fish, playing the Belted Kingfisher gives me almost all the food I need for way longer, and I don't have to develop my forest row as urgently.
Yeah, and that one fish isn't going to like last you forever, but it can certainly last you quite a while, especially if you're, if you know to tilt more towards cards that can be played with fish.
Right.
Which might seem fairly obvious, but you really do have to mentally adjust your rankings of birds. Like, I would rank something like a hummingbird way higher because it's just so easy to play with fish. Or like an anhinga, or however you pronounce that bird's name. Which is normally a bird where it's like, yeah, it's okay, it's 6 points and a fairly minor ability, but when all you have is fish, those birds are quite nice.
Right, and this leads me to a point I noted about fish being maybe the best food in terms of point conversion.
Yeah.
If you take a look at the values of each bird and how much food and which types of food these birds cost, I think generally you can find the best deals when you pay fish. So the belted kingfisher is enabling you to make some of the best food for points trades. If you look at playing birds as a form of trading your food for points.
Yeah, that's true.
So stuff like Clark's Grebe, there's a ton of 4-point birds that can be played with a worm or a fish. There's plenty of wild cost birds like the American crow and the hummingbirds that are pretty point efficient. Yeah, there's just lots of ways. And then the anhinga, there's the great egret, the Atlantic puffin, these birds that are pretty high points because of how fish, how hard fish are to usually get. They're just so much more easily playable when you have a belted kingfisher.
Yeah, the costing of birds is definitely weighted by the fact that fish are supposed to be more rare. But when you have birds that specifically give you fish, like the belted kingfisher, you can, you're kind of shortcutting that balance in the game.
Exactly.
It's also worth pointing out that birds that eat fish, this is one downside of the belted kingfisher that you do have to account for, I think, which is that nothing in the forest eats fish. So if you do want to eventually transition, like if you don't find birds that can give you food in other ways, you are going to have to find a way to get some of, or actually I shouldn't say nothing in the forest can eat fish because there are birds that can eat wild food.
But you
just have to work a little bit harder to get your forest built up if you do eventually find that you need more food, which you very well could if you're drawing a lot of cards in the early game. So it's something you can kind of have a plan for. If you're keeping multiple foods, try to think about the ones that are commonly used in the forest. Like you probably, I mean, generically speaking, an invertebrate, or as I usually call them colloquially, a grub.
I call them worms.
Yes, I saw you wrote that in the notes here. But yeah, I think those are generically the most like flexible resource. So
yeah,
if there's any way you can hold on to one of those in the early game, that's what I would prefer, because there's many birds you can play in the forest that only eat one grub.
I mean, anywhere, honestly.
Yeah, that's true.
The bonus card Food Web Expert that gives you points for the worm-only eaters, you get birds in any habitat for that one.
Yeah, that's true.
And yeah, you already touched on this a couple times, Andrew, but definitely when you play the belted kingfisher, you want to be more on the lookout for the wild cost birds, which can go in the forest and grassland habitats, just because fish are almost exclusively wetlands foods, if not used as wild foods.
Yeah. The interesting thing about those wild cost birds, though, is that if you're looking at like hummingbirds and crows, those are more ways to get food.
Yep.
So very often, if you have one of those, you can pretty much play the entire game without using your forest. There's obviously the consideration that, like, if you're using a hummingbird, you're giving food to your opponents. But the hummingbird generally gives you slightly more value. But I think the bigger value of it is that you just, like, if you're drawing a lot of cards and you have a hummingbird, like, I've commonly done something like a belted kingfisher and a hummingbird as my food solution for the game in the wetlands. Then I draw a bunch of cards and at the same time get the food I need for them, whereas everyone else is probably building up their forest to some extent.
Yeah, so I want to bring up that there's actually two ways that the hummingbirds are better for you than your opponents. Not only do you get to choose with the hummingbirds which order of, like, which turn order the food is picked in, so you can, like, control some bird feeder resets that way, but also, whenever you're playing a card and using it, and the card effect is give everyone something, you want to naturally have the least of that something.
Yes.
So that you're benefiting the most by having the extra something.
That touches on the idea of diminishing returns in general in this game. Almost everything you do has diminishing returns. Like, building up your ability to generate points or resources in a row has diminishing returns because, like, you're...
Mm-hmm.
Like, the first couple birds you play in the forest or wetlands doubles your production there. The next one only adds another half. So, so everything in the game has diminishing returns like that. So you getting that one food when you don't have very much food is way better than your opponent getting their like fifth or sixth food when they are good at producing it.
And I mean, there's a lot more strategy content if you have me on another episode of Followers of the Feather. I'd be happy to talk about the give everyone stuff cards.
Yeah, I think I've seen... Honestly, I think that a lot of the reason I've been fairly successful on BGA is that a lot of people just play them without really thinking about them. Like, if somebody plays one of those birds, I almost just expect them to use it every time unless they're a very high-rated player. And that's often not the best idea if they're doing that often.
Yeah, I guess while we're on the topic of stronger tables and weaker tables, the Belted Kingfisher is a card that definitely benefits from playing against weaker players.
Oh, yeah.
The experience I have is that when you're at tables with experienced or maybe thinking, we could call them players, that they'll be very aware of wanting to limit the benefits of the Belted Kingfisher or similar cards. So they'll wait for the player ahead of them to also play a Wetlands Bird before playing their Wetlands Bird. They'll do some extra sequencing to make sure you benefit less with the Kingfisher. On the other hand, I've had tables against less experienced players where I might get 8 or 10 fish during the game from the Belted Kingfisher. I'm like, whoa, thanks, but you could have sequenced this so that I got less fish.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of times when you have to do like 2 or 3 moves, like you know your next 2 or 3 moves, but they can be done in any order. And that's absolutely when you want to try to delay playing those wetland birds in order to deny the Belted Kingfisher. I will say I haven't necessarily done a great job of that myself in my BGA plays because most of them...
Players are kind of hard to predict sometimes. They'll do stuff that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, there's that. And then also just like I've played a lot of turn-based games and I'm not always... thinking enough about looking at the logs to see like did somebody just play a wetlands bird. Definitely probably something I'm guilty of feeding my opponents a bit too much.
Yeah, turn-based games are definitely hard to fully pay attention to.
Yeah. I think we should talk about what are you hoping to get when you play the Belted Kingfisher. I think it might be easy to underrate because you could play it and easily and maybe you only get like 1 or 2 fish out of it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important to realize that that's a lot.
Right. I was just going to say, that's all you really need.
Yeah.
Because Belted Kingfisher ideally is your turn one play, so you have one wetlands bird. I'm completely in sync with you on wanting 2 wetlands birds fairly early, and then you don't really have to do any wetlands bird playing for quite a while. So that means you only need 1 more wetlands bird. And how many wetlands birds have fish cost in them? How often is that fish cost just 1 or 2 fish? There's plenty of them. We've talked about a few already, but the Pied-billed Grebe would be another one that would be great to have.
Oh, yes. Fantastic.
Yeah, so you could have plenty of, like, very easy second wetlands birds just with that 1 or 2 fish from the Belted Kingfisher early. And then if you're lucky, you can find, like, wild-cost birds for your forest or grasslands. I love me a fish crow.
Oh, yes. So. And it's possible that your opponents, like this has happened occasionally to me, where your opponents just don't play wetlands birds for a long time. But if that's the case, you're either going up against something like a wood duck, in which case you're screwed, or your opponents probably are wasting too many resources drawing cards inefficiently, so you're fine.
Yes, they... It's very much a catch-22 for your opponents when you play a Belted Kingfisher, because they can either try to deny you these great fish, or they can deny their own game. Like, but if they do, they have to deny their own game at the same time. Like, you can't realistically expect to win Wingspan without playing a couple Wetlands Birds early with very few exceptions, the wood duck being the main one in the base game.
Yeah.
But like, if your opponents are screwing themselves over, bending over backwards to not let you have extra fish, you're still coming out ahead.
Right. And it's a little bit of a prisoner's dilemma in a multiplayer game as well, where
yeah,
like they're not going to be able to, on their own, effectively starve you of these fish. So most of the time, they're just going to give in and play the birds, which is probably better for them anyway.
You have to hope for cooperation, and you know that's hard to hope for.
Yeah. Oh, I think in terms of early game sequencing with the belted kingfisher, if you keep a few birds with fish costs, do you have any sort of like general thoughts on playing, like how many birds you should be keeping? Let me back up a little bit to frame this a little better.
Sure.
Let's say you have like a belted kingfisher, a Clark's grebe, and something else you'd like to play. Maybe the pied billed grebe. Maybe you got both grebes. Real lucky. And if you keep all three of those, you have enough food to just play the belted kingfisher. Do you think you would keep all three of those, or would you maybe play it safe and try to keep an extra food to play that, say, pied billed grebe?
That's a good question. I mean, I think you can't keep all three of those. I think you really need to have something in the forest or grasslands to be able to play pretty early. Specifically the forest, I guess, more so than the grasslands. I think if you just keep those three, your tempo for the non-card drawing part of the game will be pretty rough. Because you can't rely on belted kingfisher fish being your only food, I think is what I would really aim for. Like, make sure you have some other way to get a little bit more food. So I would probably keep a forest bird if possible.
Yeah, I think I'd even be inclined to maybe just give up one of those for some other piece of food, like just in order to keep a grub. Because even if I only play two of those birds in the wetlands using, like, the fish plus something, then I get a fish from the belted kingfisher, hopefully. You can stall by laying eggs on your kingfisher, by the way. That's going to be especially good if the end of round goal has to do with eggs in a certain nest type, or nest type with eggs, which most of the base game goals do. But yeah, you can stall by laying eggs on it until you get that fish, then play out your next bird. And yeah, so generally I would try to keep like a grub in reserve as well, if I don't have a better option, like saving a specific bird I want to play, and then know I'll be able to draw into something I can play since I'm building out my card draw. That being said, I do think it's not terrible to keep something like those three birds I said. I would be more inclined to do it if they were like guaranteed to win me that first end of round goal. Or very close to guaranteed.
I mean, look, it would very much suck to toss away one of the grebes in your opening hand. Like, those are two really great birds. The pied billed for its brown ability, and the Clarks for this nest type, the points for food conversion, the abilities, like, okay. You know, those are both amazing early birds, but sometimes you gotta toss away good stuff to make sure you have a more robust start.
Yeah, and importantly, they're both birds that do something you're already going to be good at, which is drawing and filtering cards.
Right.
The Clark's Grebe, obviously, is also just like an efficient play in its own right, but it is that diminishing returns idea again, where investing more into this isn't as important as shoring up your weaknesses.
Right, that third wetlands bird is, you know, questionable.
Yeah. We should touch on bonus cards with the belted kingfisher. Star nest right away is great.
Right. There's four nest types in the game. Each of them have a bonus card applicable to them. The kingfisher helps you with all four of them. Easy to cover. I think bonus cards is actually one reason I think people underrate the belted kingfishers. They don't realize just how much it helps. Directly, it gives you any nest type, as you said, but it's also a wild food bird, so yes. The Omnivore Expert, which is a generally good bonus card, it qualifies for that. It qualifies for Fishery Manager, Fishery Expert, I don't remember exactly what it is, but the one that gives you
Fish Eaters.
eight points if you have four Fish Eaters, or 3 points if you have two Fish Eaters. That one's generally a pretty good bonus card. Wetland Scientist, which is if you have five Wetlands-only birds, Kingfisher does qualify for it, and it makes it a heck of a lot easier to get 5 wetlands birds by the end of the game when you have free fish.
Yes.
During the game. So Belted Kingfisher is like probably the best single reason to try for max points on that one.
Its wingspan's a little bit unfortunate.
Yeah, that's
doesn't
true.
Qualify for either of the wingspan-based goals.
But I think this next part is overlooked about the bonus cards regarding the Belted Kingfisher. You have to think about what this extra fish that the Belted Kingfisher is giving you can be spent on. And a majority of those birds are both large birds and platform nest birds. And there's even a couple falconer birds, birds with hunting abilities that cost fish. Maybe like 4 in the deck.
Yeah.
So even though the Belted Kingfisher doesn't qualify for those 3 bonus cards on its own, it really helps you meet certain thresholds for those bonus cards. Large bird specialist, falconer, and platform builder.
Yeah, I agree completely. It's something that you can think about, because if you have one of those in your opening hand, I've thought a lot about how to make decisions about which bonus card to keep. I kind of have just like, you know, obviously sort of my own power ranking of them in a vacuum.
Yep, yep.
But you need to be able to adapt that to what you have, and it's really good to be able to think about the fact that something like a Belted Kingfisher is indirectly helping you with those.
Yeah.
This may be a good time to touch on expansions. I know you don't really have anything to contribute there, but...
Go for it.
I think the Belted Kingfisher's significantly worse with expansions. Well, significantly makes it sound like a lot. It's not as much as... I just mean significantly, you know, statistically significant, but not a lot. because this is largely because the bonus cards and end of round goals in the expansions aren't things that the Belted Kingfisher qualifies as often for.
Okay.
There are quite a few. I think the bonus card quality from expansions in general is lower. That the base game generally you're expecting to get more value out of bonus cards than you would with expansions. But there's just a lot of them that the Belted Kingfisher doesn't qualify for, or it qualifies for it, but it's not a very good bonus card.
Okay, yeah.
So that's one thing where I think it loses a bit of value, but the really big one is the end of round goals. The base game, most of the end of round goals have to do with eggs in some kind of nest or eggs in some kind of habitat. So it qualifies for eggs in all of the nest types and one of the habitats. So it just qualifies for most end of round goals, which is really nice.
And I mean, it's 4 capacity in the nest is also at the higher end for wetlands birds. At least the wetlands birds that I usually play are usually higher point, lower nest size.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
Belted Kingfisher gives a lot of capacity for those wetlands, eggs and wetland type bonuses.
Yeah. I think in general that star nest is a lot less valuable with expansions. You've got way more goals that care about other things, but
okay. It's
still pretty good. And I think this is also a good point to point out that 2 food for 4 points and 4 egg capacity is a pretty good deal in general in the game.
It's about average for a bird with a lame ability, I would say.
Yeah, but the Belted Kingfisher doesn't have a lame ability.
Correct.
So that's what makes it quite a bit better than average. So let's move on to Section 2, which is, of course, an aspect of the game that's definitely important enough to have an entire section devoted to it, which is bluffing that you have the Belted Kingfisher.
Well, Andrew, I mean, out of all the birds you could have invited me to talk about today, I think bluffing relates best to the Belted Kingfisher
really does.
Out of any wingspan bird. So
yeah.
I'm flattered that you'd have me on for this.
Do you want to lay it out for our listeners? What the sort of deal is with bluffing the Belted Kingfisher?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you start a game of wingspan, you can try to guess what your opponents are about to do based on their starting food choices. The most generic starting food choice would be something like, I keep 3 cards and a worm and a seed. Because when you do that, your opponents really don't have much predictability on what you could do. There's so many options of what to do. When you have something like a Clark's Grebe or a Fish Crow or a Belted Kingfisher, you're always keeping a fish in your opening. And when you think about conditional probability and like thinking back, or like some people, the more statistically inclined listeners may want to like think of the word Bayesian thinking here. When people open with a fish, by keeping a fish, the probability that they're about to play a belted kingfisher is significant, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And that means you should, if you're in front of them, play a wetlands bird before they have the chance to play their belted kingfisher. It would just be proper sequencing to not let their belted kingfisher trigger if they keep a fish out of the opening in a later seat. So, if you want to bluff the belted kingfisher, you should keep at least one fish and one other food in your opening hand. And again, thinking about like reverse conditional probability and how the worm and the seed are most generic, if you keep something like a fish, a rat, and three cards, or even better, a fish, a fruit, and three cards, my major suspicion is that you have a belted kingfisher to open the game.
Yeah, which is a good point to point out that if you are planning to open belted kingfisher, you should probably go with something like fish grub or fish seed.
Yeah.
Which might, I mean, it's still going to give a hint, but it's much fish berry or fish fruit.
Either one, fish cherry.
It's just a, that's just such a weird, weird.
Right. So if I see someone do that, what I think is that I'm completely screwed because they have a spotted towhee and a fish crow in their grassland. I'm just losing. I can't control this game. I'm playing for second. I don't care if... I have to hope that it's for a belted kingfisher and play accordingly.
Yeah, it's that's a scary keep. But so, yeah, so there's sort of two aspects of bluffing here. One is if you have it, you can try to bluff that you don't have it by not keeping something like that. And if you don't have it, and let's say you're able to use a wild food for something, keeping a fish is generally a good idea because it might influence the way your opponents play. In terms of why you would want them to like rush to play out their wetlands birds, there are a couple reasons. One is just that it gives you more information faster to know exactly
about
what
they're
up against.
Doing,
And it also means that just the other actions you might want to take are going to be available to you for longer. So if you wanted to spend your first action drawing a card from the tray, or if you wanted to spend your first action taking a duplicate of some other food that you had from the bird feeder, those are more likely to be available to you if your opponents are spending their first turns immediately playing out their cards.
Exactly. That's definitely a good summary of the reasons to bluff that you have the belted kingfisher.
We should compare it to the other things you could bluff.
If
you're trying to make the opportunity cost trade-off here. You could obviously do the same thing with sort of any pink power, but the egg-laying powers, they take a lot longer to set up.
You need at least two cards, basically, to set those up. So you can't have them done on turn one.
Yeah, and by the time you've done that, you're sort of past the point in the game where you're going to be able to easily make a prediction about the way the game could change based on what you're doing. And so deciding on an opening hand keep and thinking that it'll somehow influence your ability to play to bluff that you could play a egg-laying bird is not very feasible, I don't think.
Right.
Plus, all of those birds, I think all of them eat most just grubs and seeds. Is that true? Is that all of them?
Well, there's the really expensive forest one. There's the really expensive wetlands one. But yeah, we don't need to talk about those in the same scope as the belted kingfisher because neither of them are early game plays.
Yeah.
I think the main ones are pretty cheap and they cost worm and seed or just seed.
Yeah. So those you don't really have to consider bluffing as an alternative. The other alternative, though, that is more relevant is bluffing that you have a Eastern Kingbird.
Yes.
And the Eastern Kingbird is, its food cost is a grub or a berry, right? Mm-hmm. I'm remembering that, right?
Yep. That's right.
And so you do have to consider the alternative of holding a berry as your extra food to bluff that you might have that. As we said, holding a grub doesn't really communicate much to your opponents.
And yeah, it's just so hard to use a berry relative to a worm or a seed. There are just much fewer options. Like, I generally don't ever hold a berry on purpose unless I'm playing one of those forest birds that, or a bird that eats a worm and a berry, or a berry and or a berry, and then also need to spend a worm on something else.
Yeah.
Like, it's very rare for me to keep a berry out of the opening.
Yeah, pretty much only keep it with one, something like that, or something like a wood duck or a northern cardinal, maybe.
Right. Oh god, northern cardinal is so much worse than people think it is at first.
So, I think you're right, but I also think it's so much better than at the same time. At the same time, I think it's so much better than people think it is, well, too.
Well, no, so the thing about the northern cardinal is that fruits are even worse than fish, because they're just as rare. They're used in the cost of so many fewer birds.
Yeah.
And those birds are not as good,
yes,
as the wetlands birds that cost fish. So you're giving the belted kingfisher spending problem, where we've already talked for minutes about how you want to search out these wild cost birds. You have that same problem with the northern cardinal, but you have even more problems. And you're giving yourself those problems on purpose for a worse card than the belted kingfisher.
Yes, like, I definitely... definitely agree. I do think still, though, that the extra food, just spending it as like half of some other food, is good enough reason to take a northern cardinal pretty often.
Half of food is not a good brown ability, in my opinion.
Hmm, that's interesting. We'll have to have a debate about this at some point.
I mean, like, half of food, the opportunity cost, like, sometimes I play a northern cardinal because I got shafted in the opening five cards and I need a forest bird and I'm going to play the northern cardinal and I'm not going to like it. But just compared to something like a chickadee, which, you know, I'd say a point and half of food are close-ish in value, but the chickadee's cheaper. It's only 1 point worse. Like, I think, and the tempo of spending one food on a bird is way better than the tempo of spending two food on a bird in the opening.
That's really interesting. I feel like we have very different opinions on the northern cardinal.
I assume we do.
Because I've had a lot of games where I've gotten a northern cardinal in my opening hand, and I've just thought to myself, well, I won then.
No way.
Against, like, lower-rated opponents, at least. That's it. I'm like,
no,
that's
way.
Enough for me to win.
God, so bad.
Wow. I wasn't expecting us to have that wide of a delta.
yeah.
That wasn't really,
yeah,
what we were talking about, though. That's
no, we were talking about the Eastern Kingbird and bluffing it. Yeah, our conclusion, I think, is that the Eastern Kingbird is hard to bluff, even though it has a similar effect. The food cost difference is just too wide of a gap to reliably bluff in the opening.
And I think there's also a little bit of a thing where, since the Eastern Kingbird can live in the forest, there's a chance that your opponents won't be as concerned about it because you might already be good at getting food. Like, slightly more than with the kingfisher.
I mean, I would play the kingbird in the forest if I had no other forest birds, or one forest bird and I really couldn't find a second. But recently I've really been trying to play the pink power birds in the wetlands as much as possible.
Yeah, I think that I would generally agree with that as well. Kingbird's a nice bird, by the way, as well. Speaking of...
It is.
It's just very flexible.
And, I mean, has king in the name.
I noticed that I was going to say all of the birds with king in the name are ones that react and get you food, but that's not true at all. There's also the king rail. All hail.
Right.
I think that about does it for the bluffing section. I think we did a good job there.
Yeah, I mean, it is legitimately something I think about every game.
Yeah.
Did I see my opponent keep a fish? And belted kingfisher is, like, by far and away the most important one to consider, like...
Yeah.
Why did they keep a fish?
Yeah. Cool. So let's move on to section three now, which is, of course, making rulings on tricky situations involving the belted kingfisher. Yes, of course. That's always section three. So what are some weird situations that can come up when you play? The first one I saw in a forum post about the belted kingfisher when I Googled it was asking whether the belted kingfisher gets you a fish when someone else's, like, bird that can move between habitats moves into the wetlands?
Oh.
The answer is no.
I guess people... Yeah, no. But I guess I could see why people get confused about that.
It's mostly if they didn't really read the card, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. There's... another one you wrote down, not to steal your written points here, but when birds are actually played in the wetlands, not just any wetland eligible bird.
Yeah. That is an important thing to consider. I don't know if anyone's ever been confused about that, but I had to write something.
No, I think when you start to learn the game and you see the belted kingfisher effect, I mean, it's not 100% clear what the effect means, I think.
That's
I think
true.
It's like 95% clear.
One thing I have actually seen people be confused on is that the fish doesn't come from the bird feeder. It just comes from the general supply.
A lot
of new players, I think, read gain a fish, and even if it, I don't remember if the card actually says from the general supply, but regardless, they don't really understand as a concept what the general supply versus the bird feeder is. So
right. When you're starting to learn the game, you're like, food comes from feeder. I must take food from feeder, naturally.
Let's see. Another one here is that it only activates once between turns, and the tricky case there is that turns can span multiple rounds. Which you corrected me on there in the notes. I wrote rounds.
Yeah, so just to clarify, you can have like four people go. You could have each opponent go twice between some of your turns because of how like the turn order passes between rounds. You could be like, wait, can you be the first player in one round and the last player in the next one? Is that how it works?
I believe that is how it works.
Yeah, okay.
That is how it happens.
Yeah, I got confused in my head with like thinking about going clockwise or counterclockwise around the table. Anyway, when you're first in one round and last in the next, it will be your turn, then everyone else gets to go, and then everyone else gets to go again. And if on every single one of those opponents' turns they play a wetlands bird, you only get one fish from the kingfisher.
Yep. So another weird thing here that I realized just now as we've been talking, I didn't write in the notes, is an expansion thing, which is there are birds that have end of round powers in the European expansion and the Asia expansion. Actually, they might be in all the expansions now that I think of it. Some of those birds let you play a bird. I believe, if I'm not misremembering, and I will cut this part out if I'm wrong about this, but I believe that if somebody uses a bird, an end of round power to play a bird, your belted kingfisher doesn't get to react to it.
Oh, interesting. I would have thought it does.
I would have thought so as well, and that's why I played for a while, but I'm pretty sure we looked it up at some point and found out that we were wrong.
You know, designer rulings, they're not always what you expect, but you gotta go with them.
You have a lot of experience with that with Agricola, I know.
I sure do.
That's very strange and unintuitive to me, and I don't really see why it's the case. Like, I don't know why that has to be the limitation, but that's how it works, according to Elizabeth Hargrave or whoever else can make an official ruling on such things.
And then, do you want to cover the last couple points you have written
yes,
here?
Yes, of course.
I think,
these are very common errors I've seen quite often. So, I'll start with the one you added.
Okay.
Which is that the belt in the name Belted Kingfisher does not count for the Anatomist bonus card.
Right, and to be super clear, if you don't remember what the Anatomist bonus card is, it gives you bonus points at the end of the game if you have enough birds that have body parts in their name.
Yeah.
If you have two or three such birds, you get three, I think, and if you have four plus birds with body parts in their names, you get seven bonus points.
Yeah, and belt...
So, yeah... Like, belt is the region on your body
around
your waist,
It's true, yeah. That's your belt.
But it's not written on the bonus card, so it don't count.
Unfortunate. And the other one that's a very common mistake is that the bonus card does count birds that have the word I in them.
Mm-hmm.
However, the letter I in the belted kingfisher's name does not count.
Yeah, that's... neither of the two eyes in Belted Kingfisher.
That's true. It certainly doesn't count twice.
Yeah. Yeah, good note there.
Thank you. I was proud of that one. And that's the Belted Kingfisher. I think that about brings us to the end of the podcast here.
I have never had so much fun talking about a single wingspan bird for almost an hour.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Of course, episodes of Followers of the Feather come out every other week, more or less. And yeah, until the next one, thank you for being on the show, Lumen.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, you'll hear from me with another special guest in another couple weeks.
Bye, everyone.